Hey, thank you, Don. Good morning, everybody. Happy Sunday. Nice to see you all. Fun. Okay, so what we do here first is we say hey to one another and reach over the virtual pew, as it were. And while we do that, Don is going to play our opening song. Thank you, Don.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart. Everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Thanks, Don, for playing the opening song. Good morning, everybody. All right. Just reading what Kathy Smith's drinking. Spearmint water. All right. So at this point, let me read from our statement of purpose. Awakening together as a universal assembly of peers, dedicated to recognizing and embracing universal wisdom, regardless of the form in which it appears. We are also dedicated to recognizing the ways we deny universal wisdom by adopting personal beliefs and biases. We want to recognize these limitations so we can free ourselves from them and open to the continuous flow of universal wisdom. That's rather our introduction about who we are. Our statement of purpose is we are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self. Within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols, we seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. As Don just announced, we do have five core values. And the one most applicable to what we're doing here today, I think, is core value number five. We accept all forms as temporary appearances, permitted through enduring awareness of self. We live this value by honoring all appearances and all experiences while continually reflecting on changeless truth. So We will do our announcements now. First off, I want to let you guys know that the Awakening Together Retreat House will be closed July 1st through July 7th. We are closing those days based upon our intention for the retreat house, which is to maintain a sacred environment there, a sacred environment. In fact, there's a huge, I understand, huge music festival going on in La Vida for the 4th of July weekend. And given the influx of folks and music and sound and all of that stuff, we anticipate that it would be difficult during that time to provide a quiet, sacred environment. We also... Yeah, that's the 4th of July weekend. We also extended that a few days so that our retreat house caretaker, Cheryl, can take a much needed, much a well-deserved vacation during that time. So again, the retreat Awakening Together Retreat House will be closed July the 1st through July the 7th. The next announcement is about our member board of trustee elections. It's time once again for our elections. This summer, we will elect two trustees to the board, and we need your help in electing people to the board who are active and invested in the future of Awakening Together. Everybody will be receiving an email about the election process, and in particular, the nomination process. Basically, the nomination process will begin tomorrow, May the 20th, and you may nominate yourself or someone else to the member board of trustees by sending an email to regina@awakening-together.org. There will also be a link in the email that you're sent in order for you to nominate candidates. And then you may also support a candidate who's already been nominated by sending an email to that same address, regina@awakening-together.org. And remember, it's important to support candidates because only nominees who receive 10% of the vote of the membership will actually be placed on the ballot. So to see the current list of nominees and to learn more about the election process, look under the Things to Read menu for the nominee page on our website. And I will tell you right now that I'm going to post that this afternoon. the nominee page is not yet up. But again, that process starts tomorrow. So feel free to nominate someone. Feel free to support. To give your support to someone who's already been nominated so we can get these folks on the ballot. So the nomination process starts tomorrow and will close on June the 2nd. The next announcement is about our guest satsang tonight. Tonight we will have Eshwar Zigobind. You probably have not heard of Eshwar Zigobind before, except for maybe, I know Don's been announcing it for a while, but you probably haven't heard of Eshwar from outside sources. His awakening is amazing. His clarity is amazing. His invitation to question the status quo is just mind-boggling. It's just going to be an amazing satsang. It will give you a different way, I think, to look at some of the things that we spend a lot of time talking about. So again, it's going to be an amazing satsang. Join us tonight. It starts at 7:30 Eastern Time. It's from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And finally, let me tell you about our newest class coming up, and that is Introduction to Kabbalah. In this class, participants will consider the question, what is God? We'll contemplate the Kabbalistic teaching of ongoing creation, and with awareness of this spiritual law, determine how he or she wants to live or be. And participants will contemplate and become clear on the difference between spiritual belief and spiritual practice, which I think is right in line with this morning's talk, what we'll be talking with Eshwar about. Just fundamentally questioning these assumptions. So that class, Introduction to Kabbalah, will meet on Tuesday afternoons from June 11th through June 25th, from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern, 11 to 1 Pacific. Homework for that class will begin on June the 4th, and the facilitator will be Reverend Megan Reinhart. So for more information on Introduction to Kabbalah, look on our website under the Retreats and Classes menu. So now let me play you a little song as we change gears here. Let's see. All right. So, let's just take a moment for prayer and dedication. And I want to start that with saying, with echoing the song, I don't know why. I don't know why I'm sitting here delivering the message this morning. But I have faith that what is occurring is exactly what is supposed to be occurring. I'm grateful for the opportunity to teach what I would learn. And I ask that I would hear what I ought to hear and say what I ought to say. With gratitude and faith, amen. Okay, I don't know why. Okay, so we're gonna start with a reading, and our reading this morning is going to be done by Kathy Smith. Thank you, Kathy, for agreeing to read. And thank you for your enthusiasm with the song. It was great. I enjoyed watching you. And Kathy is going to be reading What is the Meaning of Life? And this is from a book called Everything is Included, Essays about Truth, Love, and Awareness from Nirmala. So with that, Kathy, the mic is yours.
That was a perfect song. There probably isn't one amongst us who hasn't asked that question, you know, what's the meaning of life or what's this all about? And it's interesting that you asked me to read today because I have a book that I've had since 1992. And it's called Reflections on the Meaning of Life. And there was one particular piece in this picture in this book. It's a compilation of essays and pictures from actually that were taken by Life magazine photographers as well as other famous photographers and interviewing just a wide variety of people across 36 countries in the world. And they were sharing their reflections on what is the meaning of life or what is this all about. And there's always been one particular picture amongst the many that are in here that has touched my heart in such a way, and I'll show it to you. I don't know if you'll be able to make it out. It actually takes up a couple of pages, but maybe you'll be able to see. It's actually a fella that is in a lighthouse amidst this swirling, roiling storm someplace off the Brittany coast, and he is casually standing in the doorway, leaning against the door jamb, you know, as if he's like, you know, watching his wife do the dishes or something. And that particular picture has always just like struck me to the core. And one of the sayings on this particular picture says, the very top, there's a small poem, and it says, a man said to the universe, "Sir, I exist." "However," replied the universe, "the fact has not created in me a sense of obligation." And she goes on to, Gloria Naylor then goes on to say, "While my grade school friends were reading Kipling, I took pleasure in poems similar to the one by Stephen Crane cited here. Somehow, as a child, I had intimations of what I came to learn as an adult. The sunsets don't give a damn. They were as heartbreaking in their beauty, illuminating the bleached skulls on the killing fields of Cambodia, as they were reddening the sails of Newport yachts. The stars came out just as brilliantly on the ruins of a bombed church in Birmingham, Alabama, as they did for night skiers on the pristine mountaintops of Denver, Colorado. The universe is a blank slate, and I believe there is no meaning to life. There are only valiant efforts to ward off the truth of an intrinsic void, individually and collectively, by coining a vocabulary of constructive behavior within the small unit of self, on toward the greater unit of a society, and at any given moment, on any point of this planet, that vocabulary is in flux and in danger of becoming babble. Suicide evidences an individual losing the language of life and witnessing this internal void. Genocide and world wars evidence a collective loss of such language. Will there come a time when we forget how to speak altogether? The jury is still out. And I just thought I would share that with you guys before I actually read the actual reading for today. I hope you don't mind, Jacqueline. I didn't mean to usurp in any way, but I immediately was drawn back to this book, back to what it had to say, back to that picture that for me is a representation of, you know, the world around me, the swirling of the world around me, and remembering to stay centered and calm and collected and quiet and within. And so I appreciate you asking me to read this. It's by Nirmala, as she said, and it's called What is the Meaning of Life? So what is the meaning of life is a wonderful question, because it has no final or fixed answer. Meaning is a purely mental or conceptual experience, so it's always changing and evolving. This can mean that the question unfolds in new and ever-changing ways. It also suggests that if there is no final answer, there might also be a way to go beyond the question itself. There is no inherent meaning in anything. We can squeeze an orange and juice will come out, but no meaning will ever come flowing out with the juice. We can then add meaning to the experience. I'm taking care of myself by eating healthy. Or, what a treat to have fresh juice. But the meaning that we gave to the juice is not an inherent quality of the juice itself. Since there is no final answer to what the meaning of any experience or life itself is, the question can go on and unfold in myriad ways. At first, we might look for the meaning of life in what we are taught in books or in our culture. We might conclude that the meaning of life is to get rich, or to find your true love, or to live a more spiritual life, or some other idea we get from our families, schools, or media and culture. We can spend years pursuing the meaning of life in these ways. As a result, we are likely to discover that there are many different and often contradictory answers to this question. When we first realize that there is not just one answer to this question, it can be a bit disorienting. What does it mean if what my parents or my culture taught me is not the only possible answer? But then we might discover that this open-ended quality to the question means that we can choose or create our own meanings in life. This opens the door to trying on lots of different perspectives. Today, the meaning of my life may be about decorating my house, but tomorrow, it may be about finding inner peace. The meaning of anything is simply a belief we hold in that moment, and all belief is actually make-believe. We get to make up our beliefs about life and everything in it. Even then, the question is still there. What is the meaning of life now? And what about now? And what about the new moment that's happening now? This never-ending quality of the question points to an even deeper possibility. What would life be like without the question? Do we need to believe anything about life for life to happen? Or does life unfold perfectly well when we have no ideas about it? How present are we to the actual reality of our life when we have an idea about what it means or is supposed to mean, compared to when we have no preconceived notions about it? Does having an idea about the meaning of life always add to the experience? Or does it sometimes get in the way of completely experiencing life as it is? There is no right or wrong way to experience our beliefs about the meaning of life. We can accept what we are taught. We can explore myriad ways of perceiving and understanding life. Or we can hold all beliefs so lightly that in a particular moment, we have no ideas about life and are just here experiencing the raw aliveness of the moment. One definition of truth is that the truth is whatever stops the questions. This stopping can be temporary, as when we decide that the meaning of our life is to pursue our career, and we get busy doing just that, and for a while, forget about the question altogether. But again, what is the meaning of life is such a powerful question because all of the answers are so temporary. Eventually, even a tremendously successful career is not enough. And the question comes back, and we get involved again with searching for or creating a new answer to the question. Perhaps the closest we come to a final truth about the meaning of life is when we go beyond the search for a final answer and just live in this endless, open-ended questioning with no answers, no ideas, no beliefs, just pure awareness, curiosity, joy, and wonder at all the experiences that life provides. Maybe the best answer to what is the meaning of life is no answer at all. What is life itself like when we don't know the answers to any questions? What a strange and wonderful possibility to use the deepest and most unanswerable questions to go beyond the questions, all questions. And that's the end of it. So I'm giving up the mic.
Wow, amazing. Thank you so much. Really, thank you so much, Kathy. That was the perfect introduction. I love that. In fact, I wouldn't mind having a copy of that, but maybe I'll just go back and transcribe it. I want to, by re-listening. It's your reading. Let me just get my bearings here and figure out when I'm supposed to quit talking in Mountain Time. Okay, got it. Took me a minute, but I got it. Okay, so let me tell you guys where this began for me. Last week when Regina did the service, led the gathering, she alluded to a story about giving up the final dream, and she told you guys that I would tell you about it, and I did. I talked about it at length in the As It Is program on Wednesday. And basically, I'll give you the broad outlines of it here. Basically, she's wanted all her life to live in that area of Colorado, Regina, that is. And she and Cheryl had taken a walk there around the retreat house, and some random woman who they didn't know, had never spoken to, drove up to them on their walk and said, "Hey, I'm selling my house. Do you want to see it?" I mean, just out of the blue. And they went and saw the house, and it was gorgeous and everything that Regina had ever dreamed of. She absolutely fell in love with the house. It was like $100,000 below market value, priced $100,000 below market value. Her mom said, "Sure, I'll buy that house." and then she was prompted to look within, to really deeply ask the question, is this what I'm to do? Am I to go ahead with this idea about having this house? And she was clear that the guidance was, no, you're not to go ahead with buying this house, letting this house be bought for you, this perfect house that you've dreamed of all your life. And so, you know, she told the woman she wasn't interested, or it wasn't right, or, you know, something like some euphemism. And the opportunity passed. And that story blew me away. It really threw me into a tailspin, because let me just tell you what I said in writing to Inner Wisdom about this. I said that the story makes me look again at the idea that I know what guidance is. I see that I've often looked at the events of the world as some kind of guide to help me see what I'm to see and do. The point being that these synchronicities have often to me, and I've said it many times, you know, felt like the universe is like, you know, winking at you, going, "Hey, you're on the right path. You're doing the right thing." so, and it felt like something that could be trusted, right? Oh, I'm in the flow. Things are just headed my way, right? And when I heard that that couldn't be trusted, it really made me stop short. Inner Wisdom and I talked about, that still being looking outside of myself, for meaning, for the outside world to tell me who I am. And the answer to that being always, ask, just like Regina demonstrated, ask within, even when it seems like your wildest dreams, ask, check within. But when laying this out for Inner Wisdom, the problem, the dilemma, the why I got rattled, I wrote this. I said, when contemplating this story, I heard, you do not know what guidance is. You continue to follow the ego's plan for salvation. And I asked if that was true. I mean, that's what I heard very clearly. And, I already told you about the discussion that Inner Wisdom and I had, but I can tell you that the real answer to this has come over the past week or so. It's just unfolded. So the real question is, why did it throw me? Really, why did it throw me so badly? And I realized this past week, I don't think that's where the learning started, but it came to a head this past week, that this search for meaning is really, and I loved what Kathy read to start. I think it was absolutely perfect. It pinpoints that idea. The sun shines the same on burn church in Georgia or something, right? As it does on the mountaintops in Denver. Something to that effect. the universe, or like the first thing that Kathy read, the universe said, I don't care. I don't care what your little conception of meaning is. So this search for meaning, what I realize is this search for meaning is an active search for concepts. It's an active search for an orienting factor, an organizing principle, something that I can stand on, something I can sink my teeth into. As Nirmala says, the answer to the question, what is the meaning of life? There is no final or fixed answer. And this is why. Because, as he says, meaning is a purely mental or conceptual experience. It's all concepts. By searching for the meaning of life, I'm searching for another concept that I can put my faith in. Again, as Nirmala said, there is no inherent meaning in anything. He talks about the squeezing the orange juice and then assigning meaning to it. We have the experience, but the meaning that we assign to that experience is not inherent in the experience itself. We're always assigning meaning. We're not finding it. That's what we like to think. We're finding meaning and saying, oh, thank God, okay, now I can put my faith in that. I finally found the meaning in it. If you're finding meaning in something, you're not. You're assigning it. Again, Nirmala says, the meaning of anything is simply a belief we hold in that moment. And all belief is actually make-believe. There is no inherent meaning in anything. Again, meaning is a purely mental or conceptual experience. So let's... I want to look for a minute at A Course in Miracles, chapter 31, the last one, The Simplicity of Salvation. And in this text, it says, salvation can be seen as nothing more than the escape from concepts. There's salvation defined very simply in A Course in Miracles. Salvation can be seen as nothing more than the escape from concepts. It also says the concept of the self has always been the great preoccupation of the world. The concept of the self. This is what we seek to build meaning around. When I say, oh, good, I've figured out the meaning of life. What does that mean? It means I've figured out a concept of myself. I've figured out something that will give me a reason to be. So, you know, the question that I asked to Inner Wisdom is quite apropos, right? I heard you do not know what guidance is. You continue to follow the ego's plan for salvation. What's the ego's plan for salvation? It's the opposite of what we're told here, right? Salvation can be seen as nothing more than the escape from concepts. The ego's plan is exactly the opposite. It's to find concepts, to find meaning, to presumably or pretendingly find meaning. We don't find meaning. We assign it. And then we say, I am that. The concept of the self has always been the great preoccupation of the world, and everyone believes that he must find the answer to the riddle of himself. Salvation can be seen as nothing more than the escape from concepts. I'm going to read you a little bit more here from chapter 31. Seek not yourself in symbols. What matters it which concept you accept? Your concept of yourself will still remain quite meaningless. And you will not perceive that you can interact but with yourself. That there's a self here. That idea is that there's a self here that's separate from what I see and who I interact with and what else is going on in the world. That's the, we know that, right? What's the fundamental problem? Separation. How do we create that? By clinging to this concept of a self. Now, we'll let it change. This week it might be decorating the house. Next week it might be finding the meaning of, you know, the truth of what I am, right? But this idea, this need for meaning and the subsequent assigning of meaning is the creation of this very sense of separation. It's the creation of this concept of a self. And then from there, we go on to live out our lives, to do what we think we're supposed to be doing. Course in Miracles, the concept of the self, the concept of the self embraces all you look upon, and nothing is outside of this perception. The concept of the self embraces all you look upon, and nothing is outside of this perception. So we choose a position, and then we interact with life from that position. And it's not like we've chosen the wrong one. Oh, you had a poor concept of self. Let's improve it. Let's change it. Let's make it a spiritual self. Let's even let's be only love. Let me designate what this is going to look like. That's going to color everything. That conceptualization that that there's a defined shape to what I am is the problem. It is the creation of separation. And it's all seen from that perspective. Let me read you just a little bit more from Course in Miracles. The world can teach no images of you unless you want to learn them. There will come a time when images have all gone by, and you will see you know not what you are. It is to this unsealed and opened mind that truth returns, unhindered and unbound. Where concepts of the self have been laid by, is truth revealed exactly as it is. When every concept has been raised to doubt and question and been recognized as made on no assumptions which would stand the light, when you get that none of it's true, no matter how you define yourself, no matter how you define your world, none of it's true. It's when you get to that open, empty space. Then is the truth left free to enter in its sanctuary, clean and free of guilt. There is no statement that the world is more afraid to hear than this. There is no meaning to life. Okay, that's not how it's said here, but that's the statement we're afraid of. What do you mean there is no meaning? There's got to be a meaning. It's going to be a holy one. It's going to be a really good one. But what do you mean there's no meaning? There's no inherent meaning? What? There is no statement that the world is more afraid to hear than this. I do not know the thing I am, and therefore do not know what I am doing, where I am, or how to look upon the world or on myself. That's what we're called to. That's what the invitation is, to let go of trying to find a meaning for life. Because you don't ever find it. It's not there. You only can assign it. And by assigning a meaning, you define a separate self. There's no statement that the world is more afraid to hear than this. I do not know the thing I am, and therefore do not know what I am doing, where I am, or how to look upon the world or on myself. Yet in this learning is salvation born. And what you are will tell you of itself. Salvation can be seen as nothing more than the escape from concepts. And, you know, we've heard this, but it's seemingly hard to hear. Oh, that concept, that's a bad concept. I won't have that one anymore. That's not what that says. Any concept of a self is what keeps you seemingly hindered and bound. and with no room to be told what you are, what I am. The altar's occupied. And I thought it was in here, but I don't see it. Actually, the reading Kathy did for us, What is the Meaning of Life? This concept of just stopping, you know, we've heard Gangaji talk about it and Papaji and others, this idea of just stopping. And it seemed a little amorphous. What do you mean just stop doing? Stop doing what? And it's this, it's the defining, and it's, you know, and of course we pass it around. It's not just defining ourselves. We define what this means, what that means. We're always trying to navigate, defend what we've built, right? Navigate the world by assigning meaning. And the invitation is to stop assigning meaning. We don't think we're assigning meaning. We think we're finding it, but it's not true. It's a trick. There is no inherent meaning in life. Wow. You know, and that could be seen as quite depressing. And of course, Miracles talks about that. I don't think I marked it. But, you know, it says men have died on seeing this, right? That there is no inherent meaning. They've either committed suicide or given up, right? It said, but all they had to do was take one step further. That's the point. There is no inherent meaning. You don't have to give up on hearing that. You know, and again, these things are hard to hear through human ears. Even when we hear that the truth will tell you of itself, we still expect it to go, oh, here's the secret. Here's what you've been missing. Here's the meaning of life. That's not it. Life is. Any meaning that we apply or that we could, you know, that we could have revealed to us, any meaning is a concept. The meaning of anything is simply a belief we hold in that moment, and all belief is actually make-believe. Any meaning that we would apply would have to be organized around a self. There is no self. It's this attempt to have an organizing principle that covers what we are, that covers self or no self. I have a quote here from Jed McKenna, but it's been said by many people. No self is true self. No self is true self. Despite the apparent paradox, being enlightened means there's no one left to be enlightened. That's the secret. There's no organizing concept. Life is what flows through each of us and all of us at once. It's like it's like a butterfly. It's gonna be, you know, float over here on Jacqueline for a minute, and then on Kathy, and then on Dawn, and then on George, right? And then, which brings the time concept into it. So just ignore that part of it. Right? But there's no Jacqueline. There's no Kathy, there's no Dawn, there's no George. is the flow of life. It's the peeking through the that particular window. Consciousness is peeking through this particular window. And to need life to have a meaning, as far as Jacqueline's concerned, is a resistance to that very fact. So, wow, time is flying. Nirmala says, this never-ending quality of the question points to an even deeper possibility. What would life be like without the question? Do we need to believe anything about life for life to happen? What if we just stop? Do we need to believe anything about life for life to happen? Or does life unfold perfectly well when we have no ideas about it? Doesn't life go on? Doesn't life, doesn't isness is? Doesn't beingness be? Do we need to believe anything about life for life to happen? Or does life unfold perfectly well when we have no ideas about it? How present are we to the actual reality of our life when we have an idea about what it means? I think Eshwar and I will be talking about this some more this evening. I really invite you to take part in that satsang, because I think you'll have questions as well. You know, again, everything that we see is processed through the centering principle that we use, this idea of a self. I spoke with Eshwar a little bit yesterday, testing, you know, the getting in the room and that sort of thing. And he said, you know, just go turn on the water. I see you're standing in your kitchen. Go turn on the water. Do you hear the sound of the water? Is that just sound happening? Or do you have this whole story about it, about how you walked over and turned on the water, and that caused the that caused something to happen in the plumbing, and then the water's making this, or is there just sound? Do you see how we insert ourselves into everything? The meaning of the sound is, I went over and turned on the water. Is that the meaning of the sound? Do you see how I interpose myself between what my actual experience is hearing? Just hearing, shh. Or do I have this whole story about what that means? Those are the concepts. It's using this as an orienting principle for life. And it's this concept that there's a separate self running around doing things, believing things, making things mean something. It's this that keeps me from seeing that this is an illusion. It's an illusion in the sense that this is what I am. This is a vehicle. This is a vehicle for experience. But am I the vehicle? And to the extent that I want to find meaning and tell stories about why things happen, how they happen, my role in making them happen, I'm focused on the vehicle, not what I am. He says, can we hold all beliefs, including the one where I lift the thing on the sink and water comes out, that there's a cause and effect relationship? Can we hold all beliefs so lightly that in a particular moment we have no ideas about life and are just here experiencing the raw aliveness of the moment? I'm just hearing the shh. Nirmala says, perhaps the closest we come to a final truth about the meaning of life is when we go beyond the search for a final answer and just live in this endless, open-ended questioning with no answers, no ideas, no beliefs, just pure awareness, curiosity, joy, and wonder at all the experiences that life provides. So what does it mean to live life undefined? You know, we're searching for freedom. Freedom from what? Freedom from concepts. Freedom from definitions. Freedom from an organized universe. Because the only thing that universe can be organized around is my concept of myself. You know, that's not to say that there is no, this is a tough part, that there is no organizing principle, that there is no flow, that, you know, the oceans have a pattern. The waves come in, the waves go out, right? The plants have a pattern, a principle, you know, the sun comes and it makes them grow and all that whole photosynthesis thing. But the problem with my search for meaning is that I would have all that organized around me. That's how the mind understands the meaning of life. My organizing principle would be me, would have me at the center, regardless of what I see the meaning of life as. So when we talk about freedom, we're talking about freedom from the need to define life, from the need for it to have a meaning. Because the need for it to have a meaning simply distances us further and further from the reality of what we are. It keeps us from seeing the truth of no self. That's the truth of no self. There is no statement that the world is more afraid to hear than this. I do not know the thing I am, and therefore do not know what I am doing, where I am, or how to look upon the world or on myself. Yet in this learning is salvation born, and what you are will tell you of itself. So the question is, if I'm not a human being, What am I? That's when you throw the concepts out the window. Salvation can be seen as nothing more than the escape from concepts. So that's where this week has led me to. Okay, if I'm not a human being trying to realize my spirituality, really, if I'm not a human being, what am I? And sit in that. And when the Course says there's no statement the world is more afraid to hear, sit with it for a minute. It's scary. It is scary. What do you mean? I mean, you know, where do I put my feet down? The earth is moving. I don't know. Give me a minute. It's frightening. It's disorienting. But that's where we're going. That's freedom. Not the freedom to quit defining, hindering, binding, and sit in that scary spot. And allow the truth to tell me of itself. So, I don't know where that time went, but it's gone. So let me play a closing song. And if you will, please take this opportunity to donate. You know, we operate on your donations. I'll play this song. It's great. Yay. All right. So it is your turn to talk. We have a few minutes before the the formal service is over. And then, of course, we have our half an hour fellowship with Jay. Let's see. I don't know if anybody has their hand up because I'm not looking at the right screen. So raise your hand virtually or literally. And share anything that you'd like to share about your contemplation. And Dawn, you can help me look for hands. I'm not seeing any. I think I've got flabbergasted everybody. Maybe that ain't a bad thing, right? Yeah, success. Kathy.
Jacqueline, Jay had his hand up. So I'm
gonna give thank
the mic
you.
For Jay.
Thank you. Jay, I'm sorry I missed you. I don't see you, but yeah, have at it.
No, I was on the other screen, Jacqueline, since I came into the room after I came over to my house across the alley. Second page. I changed my mind after I raised my hand. Like two people, like, Jay raised his hand. Okay. There was an entry in my journal recently that I was just really joyed to hear your teaching, because the message of salvation is freedom from concepts is something I've been sitting with, and obviously you did a lot of work with this as well, Jacqueline, this week. Jacqueline texted me, I had a really productive week. I'd say it's a spiritually and physically productive. very refreshing to hear the teaching. Really received it well, and was with Jacqueline as she turned on the faucet and just joined her in the sound of that, the water, you know. You know, I tend to be an intellectual person that prides himself on being very smart and stuff like that. And this whole thing of, you know, letting all that go and just being in the simple truth is really the way to God, I think. And because it's not that God wasn't always there. It was just the way to wake up to God, hence awakening. Right? Awakening, like it was already there. You're just waking up to it, you know. So, you know, it's a good moment. And how incredibly unnecessary all of our thoughts are. And, you know, me taking pride in being smart or intellectual isn't anything better or worse than anything else anybody takes pride or, you know, identifies with as their person. Really, it's all just a giant soup of the same thoughts, right? It's not better or worse than anything else. It's just what we identify with, right? So, giving up the mic.
Thank you, Jay. Yeah, it's all the same soup. I like it. Don, I'm going to turn this over to you because the formal time is over. I see Ruby has her hand up. Ruby, let me let Don close this out, and then you can speak during the fellowship half hour. Okay, Don, it's yours.